Tom, it's 7:30. It's time for funny stuff. Where's my theme music, Tom? Just start the theme music so we can start the program.
I'm on break, Bob.
You're on, Tom. It's 7:30.
What? Look, Bob. Remember we were talking about the union the other day? Well, I'm in the tape spinners and microphone handlers, local 724, and according to the union rules, I get to take a 10-minute break every hour on the half hour.
So what is that? I'm just supposed to sit here until 7:40? That means my program's only 20 minutes long. We're going to have, what, 10 minutes of dead air here while we wait for my show to begin?
Hey, look, you want to take this to arbitration or what? I'm drinking my coffee.
Tom, listen, what would it take? What do I need to do? There's always a price. What would it take for me to get you to play my theme music right now so I can start my program?
Well, Bob, if you're really going to be willing to do something for me, I'm going away for the weekend, and I need somebody to walk H.L. Mencken and Zsa Zsa Gabor.
I'm almost afraid to ask. H.L. Mencken and Zsa Zsa Gabor?
Yeah, they're my St. Bernards.
Okay, Tom, just put the music on.
Oh, and there's my plants, too.
The sacrifices we put up with. Hi, everybody. Bob Claster here, and I'm your host for Funny Stuff, half an hour of comedy, presented every Friday night here on KCRW. You know, it has occurred to me that most of the records that I play on this program come from a certain era, pretty much the from between the late 50s through the 60s, and it occurs to me that is pretty much the golden age of comedy records, but I'm glad to say that tonight we'll be listening to some records from the 70s, and it's, of course, Lily Tomlin tonight. I think her records, rather than being the same old 60s sort of style of comedy, really adapted to the 70s. She did a wonderful job of creating a whole new style, really. Her range of characters is enormous between, the Susie Sorority she does, Edith Ann, the six-year-old child that she did on Laugh-In, and the Ernestine the Telephone Operator, Sister Boogie Woman. Her characters are all sexes, all ages, all races. And her television specials recently have been magnificent. If anybody in the audience has videotapes of those specials, please let me know. I'd love to copy them. Is that illegal? Can I say it? Anyhow, we're going to listen to hopefully a wide variety of her characters tonight. And let's start off with Edith Ann, the six-year-old.
Well, maybe if my name was Edith Ann, maybe you could ask me some questions.
How's your brother?
My little baby brother. We're trying to get rid of him. Yeah, we are, mister. Every time I put him in the bed to take his nap, he just keeps kicking off the blanket, so I had to scotch tape him to his legs. He likes it. What lady?
Where do babies come from?
Don't you know either? So many people have asked me that at Slippery Rock. Don't you have any idea, mister? Mister, don't you have any idea? Babies come from inside their mother's bodies. Yes. The father puts his penis in the mother's vagina and plants a seed. And then a little baby grows, and it's very tender. Try to tell as many people as you can in town. Yes, lady, my best friend is my dog Buster. Yes, I kiss him right on the lips. I love Buster. I took him in the park roller skating and he turned his ankle. Yeah, and I had to bring him home in a shopping bag. Something horrible happened to Buster. Me and Junior Phillips was giving him a little bath. And accidentally some Clorox fell in. And all of his furs fell out. Now we can write on him with a magic marker. Do you have, lady? Lady. Yeah, I went to Nancy Scobie's birthday party and it was boring. The ice cream was horrible and the cake was horrible, so I just took some of the presents. Wait, I will tell you one last secret. Sometimes when I'm happy, I feel just like crying. But when I am sad, I never feel like laughing. So I think it is better to be happy. You can get two feelings for the price of one. And that's the truth.
I worry that the person who thought up Muzak may be thinking up something else. I worry that drugs have forced us to be more creative than we really are. Does your mind feel more and more like Teflon? Nothing sticks to it. The other day I bought a wastebasket and I carried it home in a paper bag. And when I got home, I put the paper bag in the wastebasket.
Madam Chairperson, may I address the hash session? Okay. Now, I may only be song leader of this sorority, but on the motion on the floor about wearing white dresses for the second rush party, I just want to say, okay. Now, we voted to wear, just a second, you guys. We voted to wear white dresses and white heels. And now Sybil over there is complaining that we look like nurses. Well, by golly, I say we ought to have the gumption to look like nurses. Okay. And they're wearing white heels. Just a second. Let's make sure they're polished. By golly, there's nothing more unattractive than scuffs. Okay. And make sure you buff them. Do we want those white smudges on our ankle bones like some sisters I know? And I sure hope, yes, sir, we don't have any of the gang here wearing bone-colored heels or off-white or eggshell white or any of those pathetic excuses for pure white. We voted to wear pure white. Let's stick to our vote. Madam President, I can tell the gang one more thing. Okay. If you guys have tears, prepare to shed them now. I look at last fall's pledge class, I almost barf. Pretty, witty, yes. But half of them flunked out of school. And now we need some hard workers for the house. Some backbone, some discipline, and some elbow grease. I say we stop trying to pledge potential homecoming queens and Greek week queens and concentrate on the old greasy elbow girls. Everybody cannot be a queen. What about the drones? Isn't it time we had a queen? And I have my rushy Missy Maddox in mind. Here you are trying to blackball a perfectly good drone that makes this country great. If you're going to blackball anybody, blackball this Buffy Woodstock or Buffy Altamont or whatever her name is. Every rush party she acts so smug I could barf. The very fact, just a second, you guys, the very fact that she refused to wear hose to the preference party when we, the hostesses, had to brave this heat and hose is proof to me of what I call pure downright rad lib orneriness. On a tour, just a second, on the tour of the rooms, she saw my bulletin board with a picture of the Lennon sisters and she said as if to herself, but I heard, she said, wow, I don't believe it. And inside myself, I asked myself, do I want her for a sister? No. No, I do not think we should take smug people into this sorority. I do not think we should take smug people into our hearts. Then she asked me why we were all wearing rust-colored dresses. I said, but buff, the theme of this rush party is autumn. We are supposed to represent autumn leaves, and autumn means rust-colored. She said, the mints in the candy dish are pink and white. If your theme is autumn, then why aren't the mints rust-colored to match your dresses? I don't know about the rest of you, but to me, you guys, that is perversity. Go ahead, vote into your mints, the pervert. I will still my tongue and say no more. But by golly, if you're going to pledge anybody, pledge Missy Maddox. She toured the entire summer one year singing it up with people. And while I'm on the subject of moral rot, just don't forget, what about that girl who pledged at Delta Iota Grano Salo's house? And what about that unborn fetus they found in the Diggs incinerator? Well, you guys, we only have ourselves to blame if we pledge these girls to snub their noses at wearing hose to a preference party and we find an unborn fetus in the sorority incinerator. I heard what you said, Sybil. Don't you dare call Missy Maddox obsequious. I hate people who use big words when small ones will do the job. She is a square. A square and proud of it. Well, by golly, if square means getting up for class on time and pitching in when there is work to be done, then by golly, I am for the squares. Let's all rise and sing Stigmata, Thigh Girl.
You hear about those pigeons that found they could alter the behavior of lab technicians just by refusing corn pellets? I've actually seen a man walk up to four women sitting in a bar and say, "Hey, what are you doing here sitting all alone?" It's the first day of school. I talk to myself as I walk.
This year I gotta buckle down. The second grade is serious business.
I'm not wearing pigtails. My hair has been pin curled, frizzy on the ends, parted on the side, and held in place by a red plastic two lovebirds on a stick barrette. A vinegar rinse gives it red highlights, and it bounces as I walk. My new dress is blue and white checked with a white piqué yoke embroidered with cherries. I feel so attractive in this outfit that just this morning I've said to my mother, "Mama, if I die while I'm still a kid, will you bury me in this dress?" My new school bag slung across my chest bangs between my elbow and my waist. Inside, my new Cinderella pencil box with its own built-in sharpener. No more interrupting walks to the windowsill. And something I have always wanted, a big new art gum eraser with all its corners still sharp. I should feel a lot better than I do. And I did until last May when Miss Fortin called on me to read aloud. I liked school. And when I'm asked to read aloud, I read aloud. Full out. A performance almost. Lily Tomlin, you read for us. Everything is going well. The class is caught up in the story. I've got them. Very loudly I say,
"Jack is worried. He cannot find the boat. There is water all around the island."
How was I supposed to know? You think you're okay, and then something like Island comes along. That was last May. For the rest of the term, when I was asked to read aloud, I would just mumble into my book. And now I've spent the entire summer hoping and praying that I will not be Lily Island Tomlin for the rest of my life. But deep in my heart, I know it's impossible for 30 kids to have moved and changed schools over the summer. I dread the schoolyard.
There's that kid Tomlin, so stupid.
Oh, yeah, this one.
But like every other kid in America, I have the chance to start over again each September. And after my first day in the second grade, I'm happy. Because nobody seems to remember Island, and because I found the best reason ever to like school, Miss Sweeney.
Miss Sweeney, Mama, her name is Miss Sweeney. She said we could sit wherever we want. I sat right up front, and she smiled at me. Mama, she looks just like a movie star.
Miss Sweeney did look like a movie star. She looked like Loretta Young. And she wore cashmere sweaters to school. Each one monogrammed with a little M, big S, little A. I'd sit at that first desk in row three for hours trying to figure out that monogram. I knew the big S stood for Sweeney, and I just had to know what her first name was, little M, little A. And one day when I should have been coloring Lake Michigan blue, I peeped up and I saw Miss Sweeney reach inside her cashmere sweater. My heart stopped. As I watched the shape of her hand move slowly under little M, big S, little A. I didn't have breasts yet. I was only 7. But I knew that when I did, I would feel about mine exactly the way Miss Sweeney felt about hers. That day I walked her to her car for the first time. "What is it that you wanted to ask me, Lily?"
Is your first name Margaret Ann?
Oh. How did you guess?
It was just a hunch. Could I call you Margaret Ann?
Well, I think you'd better call me Miss Sweeney.
Yeah, okay.
Well, at least in front of the other children.
See you tomorrow, Margaret.
In my mind, we were friends. True, she was taller. Almost 3 feet. But they didn't let kids wear high heels to school in those days. In class, if I'd speak out of turn, she'd understand. She'd say, "Hold your horses, Lily." And then she'd laugh. I could always make her laugh when I wanted to, and I almost always wanted to. Some days, if she was tired after school, I'd understand. It wasn't easy teaching 30 kids how to read and write. I didn't think of myself as teacher's pet. It's just that I had nothing in common with a bunch of illiterate 7-year-olds. I knew Miss Sweeney had a boyfriend, and I had a hunch his name was Daryl. Yes, one day, Daryl would walk into class. Miss Sweeney would turn from the blackboard. Their eyes would meet. Daryl would rush to her side, sweep her up into his arms, and give her a long, passionate movie star kiss. The other kids would laugh and titter. What could you expect? Not me, I'd understand. Daryl would look at me, the only child not laughing, walk to my desk, lift my eyes to his and say, "Why, you must be Lily." I'd look at the monogram D on his sweater.
"Yes, and you are Daryl, aren't you?"
"Why, how did you guess?"
"Oh, Daryl, Daryl, Lily is the very best there is at guessing names. How she ever guessed Margaret Ann, I will never know."
"Why, of course, I should have known. Won't you join Margaret and me for a cup of coffee? Margaret wants you to be bridesmaid at the wedding. And then you must come and live with us."
I was the first to see him. He tapped lightly on the glass. Miss Sweeney turned suddenly from the blackboard and squeaked the chalk, something she'd never done before. She glanced at the door, she glanced back at us, and her voice seemed to tremble as she said, "Excuse me, class." And she disappeared into the hall. I couldn't see them, but I knew exactly what they were doing. And my blood was pounding from the thought of monogram pushing against monogram. The kids were quiet at first, but they began to grow restless, so I got up to quiet them down. And before I realized it, I was standing at the blackboard, a piece of chalk in my hand. I don't know what came over me, maybe it was the laughs, but I turned to the blackboard and I began to draw a beautiful Hawaiian hula girl. The swaying arms, the grass skirt. Beside the hips, I drew little shake marks. And when I drew the breasts, I covered them lovingly with a little grass brassiere. Monogrammed with a little M, big S, little A. In my very best handwriting, I wrote, "Shake it, Miss Sweeney." Everyone laughed, and then I sat down. When she came back into the room, I think her lipstick was smeared. I didn't get a good look. As soon as she saw the hula girl, she turned right at me and she said, "Lily, this time you have gone too far. It is just not funny." On the way home that day, all I could think of was Miss Sweeney. "Lily, this time you have gone too far. It is just not funny." As I stood at the corner of Hamilton and Claremont Streets, I watched the Hamilton bus approach. I decided to throw myself in front of it to end it all. I didn't see her. I swear to God,
she showed such promise.
Hey, that's the kid that said
Islam. Quick,
somebody get
Miss Sweeney. That's her favorite pupil. Wait, wait. It's too late. And as the crossing guard picked up my limp little body, cradled my little head in his arms, with my last breath, I gazed up at his tear-stained face and I said, "Tell Miss Sweeney goodbye."
Thank you. One ringy-dingy. Two ringy-dingies. A gracious good afternoon. This is Miss Tomlin at the telephone company. Have I reached the party to whom I am speaking? Mr. Veedle? Mr. Veedle, you owe us a balance of $23.64. When may we expect payment? Pardon? When what freezes over? No. Mr. Veedle, you are not dealing with just anyone's fool. I am a high school graduate. Now then, when may we expect payment? Oh, Mr. Veedle, I don't see why you're kicking up such a ruckus when, according to our files, your present bank balance plus stocks, securities, and other holdings amount to exactly pardon? Privileged information. Oh, Mr. Veedle. Oh, that's so cute. No. You're dealing with the telephone company. For instance, as I look through your income tax return for 19... Oh, Mr. Veedle, you don't understand. We are not subject to city, state, or federal regulations. We are omnipotent. Omnipotent. That's potent with an omni in front of it. Now then, when may we expect payment? Oh, dear me, Mr. Veedle. I'm afraid we're going to have to discontinue your outgoing service. And if we do not receive payment within 10 days, we will send a large, burly serviceman to your home to rip it out of the wall. I'd advise you to lock up the liquor. He's a mean drunk. Now then, wouldn't you rather pay, Mr. Veedle, than lose your service and possibly the use of one eye? Oh, dear me. You know, Mr. Veedle, I think we can persuade you to pay after all. I want you to listen to a little recorded conversation. Can you hear that all right? That's right, it is you. Do you recognize that other voice? That's right. And do you remember the basic content of that conversation? Wait a minute. I want to hear this part again. Oh, Mr. Veedle. Now, Mr. Veedle, if you're interested, we have 96 hours more. Oh, I think blackmail is such an ugly word. Let's just call it a vicious threat. Well, how very nice. It's been a pleasure talking with you. We will await your check. And Mr. Veedle, there's no reason on earth for you to feel personally persecuted. We may be the only phone company in town, but we screw everybody.
For years, I have had a family problem I could not solve. Dirt, grease, and stains in my family wash. I tried every brand of detergent on the market, but nothing seemed to do the job. Then about a month ago, a man came to the door and asked me to try something new called GER. He said to me, "With GER, your problems will be over." Naturally, I was skeptical. But I tried it anyway, and was I surprised. Everything came out perfect, even the tough things. I was so excited, I just had to come on TV and tell you about it. GER contains a new additive called carnivore that seeks out and gobbles up stains like 1,000 tiny little piranha fish. To prove it, I have brought some samples from my own family wash. See this diaper? It has been worn 6 days. Disgusting. And look at these grass stains on Billy's chinos. These are really tough. And here, these lipstick stains on my husband's collar. Well, anyway, I am only going to take half a cup of GER. You only need half a cup because it's concentrated. See, you can actually feel it coming on for weeks and weeks now. He's been so indifferent no matter how hard I tried to please him. Because it's concentrated, you save money because you use less and less and less time at home. All those nights he said he was going bowling. I had just been kidding myself along like some kind of fool. Well, the hell with you. Gurr is not only strong, it is safe, for even the most delicate washables, like this sheer pink negligee he gave me on our 8th anniversary. You never cared about me. All you ever wanted was supper on the table and no responsibility. Well, you want to know something? Billy isn't yours.
A gracious good afternoon. This is Miss Tomlin of your telephone company. How may I, in all humble servitude, be of assistance? You're trying to reach your husband at his office and keep getting a busy signal. Well, perhaps he's using his instrument. An hour and a half. Well, I will check to see if there is mechanical failure. Mrs. Norman, that phone is in usage. Your husband is making an overseas call to Korea, I believe. Oh, he was stationed there during the war. Must have been lonely for you. Just a minute, let me listen now. Mr. Norman and some woman are talking about your son in Korea. Oh, excuse me, Mrs. Norman, but Bok Choi seems a strange name for a boy from Pleasantville. You say you don't have a son in Korea? Well, that's odd. Mr. Norman does. Oh, no. Oh, Mrs. Norman. Oh, Mrs. Norman, I am so sorry. Oh, I am so sorry that you had to learn it this way. But we at the phone company do like to keep families in touch. No. Mrs. Norman, listen to Ernestine. Turn off the gas. I'll plug you into his line and you can hear every word the bastard's saying. Listen. Oh? Can you hear all right? Oh, did you hear that? The things they do in Korea you wouldn't even think of doing here. No, Mrs. Norman, I've got a great idea. Mrs. Norman, believe me, it's just like a man. They're all animals. Let me call up my cousin. He's a divorce lawyer. We can hook Mr. Norman before he gets off the line. Henry, this is Ernestine. I've got a live one for you. The wife, she's a wonderful woman. I've got her on hold. The husband, I'm not too sure. I think he's with the government. Seems very active in foreign relationships. I'll hook it up so you can get a voice print to use in court. Mrs. Norman, I'm back. Listen, I think we can get you the house, the car, half the business, and the kid in Korea. No. Mrs. Norman, no, don't thank me, dear. Nonsense. Don't. It'll be on your next bill.
Ah, yes, the wonderful world of Lily Tomlin. That'll do it for tonight's episode of Funny Stuff. There was a lot of wonderful Lily Tomlin stuff I just didn't have time for tonight, specifically her routine about Glenna, a child of the 60s. It's 20 minutes long, and I think I'll feature it on a future show one of these days. Let's see, coming up next week, we will be featuring a program of musical parodies, and then the following week is Henny Youngman. So lots of good stuff coming up on Funny Stuff. If you have any suggestions, comments, obscene mail, anything you'd like to send me, the address is Bob Claster, C-L-A-S-T-E-R, Funny Stuff, KCRW, 1900 Pico Boulevard, Santa Monica, California, 90405.
I got a suggestion for you, Bob.
Oh, no, come on, Tom. Later, Tom, later. So until then, this is your host, Bob Claster, reminding you to keep that sense of humor well occupied, well exercised, because you never know when you're going to need it. Good night, everybody.